to talk about a little bit about what RSCs do now, what their mission is, how they do it. I'll talk about some of their, what I see as the climate requirements from the RSCs, and then I have time and people will just go away at the end. I'll have a couple slides on a case study. Okay, so what do RSCs do? This diagram here kind of shows the time ranges over which RSCs are interested. And you can see it covers everything from hours out to months, even years. So their basic mission is to provide river flood forecasts for the protection of life and property as the mission of the Weather Service. But they also provide basic hydrologic forecast information for economic well-being. I'm going to focus mostly on this water supply issue because I think that overlaps more with the climate than the rest of it. Real quickly, the River Forecast Center functions are basically to run and assimilate, run hydrologic models and assimilate data to run them with. They also provide technical support to the weather forecast offices that use the hydrologic forecast, and they also provide the technical support to outside users, like other large federal agencies like the Bureau of Reclamation or Army Corps of Engineers. They also have this function where they have an applied research and development function. Some of the RSCs have up to 60% of their software is actually developed locally, so they're using software that's in addition to the software provided by OHD that Gary talked about. Okay, so water supply forecast. This is where we make water supply forecasts for cases. The color here. They are a joint product with the NRCS, the group in Portland, built the services group that was mentioned earlier. I think they're kind of unique in the Weather Service that they're an opportunity to directly apply climate forecasts. I mean, there's not a lot of other products that the Weather Service issues that can do that. There is an existing procedure to do that. It was developed by OHD, mostly. And it takes the tertile forecast from CPC and basically shifts the distribution of the inputs into the hydrologic model. I'll come back and talk about that a little bit later. So this is kind of one area, kind of jumping to the end here, where I think that there could be potential for collaboration is getting help from the NOAA climate community and how to better use these forecasts or what forecasts should be used to drive the water supply forecast.
These are basin forecasts?
These are basin forecasts,
Basin by basin.
Basin by basin. These are, you can kind of see them.
That's fine. I just looked at it and see this before.
We assume the tertile probability shift applies at the basin scale as well as at the larger scale. But we have it translated, and so we're trying to use it.
Right. So lest anybody thinks this is a new thing, I wanted to insert a couple slides here, kind of giving a history of climate, using climate and water supply forecasting. Starting in 1917, there was a first documented application of using snowpack information for Lake Tahoe. And then, kind of going through here, I got a couple of the key points. In 1947, the Weather Bureau started publishing, along with the SCS, started publishing seasonal water supply forecasts and outlooks. And then you can see people at CPC are probably more familiar with some of this than I.
Which goes down?
The water supply forecast?
Yeah.
They're issued jointly by the NRCS and the Weather Service.
Where do you get the data information from? That's the none of the 1917. Difficult to get the
Dave Random has the references. I don't have them here, but
I'm just curious.
I thought it was kind of a neat slide to look at. My bullet point on the right here, it looks like, but a couple other key points. Let's see. In 1987, Rob Hartman started looking at using climate outlooks objectively to alter the ESP, and thermal string flow prediction traces for the Great Lakes. And then going down to the bottom, this 2000, this is the technique that John and I were mentioning earlier about how we adjust, how we use the tertile forecast now to adjust the ESP ensembles. Okay, so how do we make the water supply forecast? We use there's two major tools that we use. The first of which is one of the locally developed software things I mentioned, which we call the water supply. And this is essentially just a regression. Well, it is just a regression equation. It's based on, historically, it's been based primarily on snow observations. As the season progresses, you get more snowpack, so you get more skill into your seasonal runoff forecast. But as that previous slide alluded to, we've kind of added in climate conditions and sea conditions and other things over the years to make these more accurate. The second tool, which I'll go into more in the next slide, is the ensemble stream flow prediction, which Gary has talked about. And this is based on the continuous calibrated hydrologic model, in our case, the Sacramento model. And it requires a calibration, which I'll jump into here. This is a schematic of how we run ESP in the Weather Service. I left out the snow model because I ran out of room. But essentially what we're doing is we're taking the historical time series over all years that we have records for, which is usually in the order of 30 to 50 years. And we combine that with forecast time series for the first 14 days or first 10 days or whatever we have available. And then we can do this procedure to adjust the historical time series based on the tercile forecast for CPC. And that gives us the input time series. These are basin time series, mineral temperature, mineral precipitation, which feeds into the NWSR plus the hydrologic model. Also feeding into the model is the current conditions, which is soil moisture, reservoir stream flow, snowpack, which I didn't put on here. And then the current RFC forecast. This is both observed in the forecast, actually, the precipitation, temperature, and model state updating. So the reason I wanted to include this slide, and it's a good follow-up from Ken's presentation, is all of these things represent a lot of what Ken was trying to do at a national scale. So we have at individual RFCs archived records for calibration purposes of soil moisture, reservoir stream flow, precipitation, temperature, all of that. So I mean, that seems to me to have an obvious, you know, application in the drought world. And I think this is maybe something that's been very untapped up to this point. Mm-hmm. So anyway, just wanted to put that little plug in. These are typically on 6-hourly time scales, although some of the RFCs are moving more towards 1-hourly. Time scale for the length of the forecast. Typically, water supply forecasts are for the spring runoff period, so they'll start usually starting on January 1st. They'll go through the end of the summer, which can, depending upon the basin, can be July, August, September. And then as the season progresses, the forecast window gets shorter and shorter. It's like February 1st to the end of September, then March 1st.
But you're driven by prior indicators of snowfall and
right.
Soil moisture, and then on top of that, you also have to do precipitation forecasts for
right.
So,
okay. Right. So this system attempts to consolidate all that into one system. The other point I wanted to make is the RFCs do a daily near real-time quality controlling of precipitation and temperature information. I think the precipitation information feeds in the CPC now for, I'm not sure what, but that's also, I think, another data source that might be of interest to the climate community.
Kevin, those forecasts are done at the first of the month by month basis, right?
Actually, they're bi-monthly, so they're twice a month. No, semi-monthly.
Twice a month. Bi-weekly. And the reason why they're not doing more often is because of the implication for the trade implication.
Right. They have the same issues the CPC has with the releasing forecast, early or late. They have to release them at a specific time to satisfy the commodity market.
Right.
Last point on this slide is just notice that the output of this is an ensemble. So as Pedro mentioned earlier, RFCs have developed software so you can slice and dice that to get probabilities for any threshold or any time window that these are.
The
RFCs are
running their own models.
Yeah.
So the models are run in the RFC.
Yeah. Right. They're developing at least deeper
planet.
Wait a minute. The parameters are actually developed with the RSEQ. They actually apply the model and tune it and calibrate it.
Right.
As well as
run it locally.
Which is why they have long archives of these data sets.
Yeah, that is a major difference between the way NCEP operates and the way the Hadoop operates.
Right.
NCEP is both develops and runs the operational model.
Okay, so I have two slides here that kind of spell out our pie in the sky requirements. The first is obviously increased skill in precipitation forecast. Obviously, there was a study in 1981 that showed a 6% improvement in forecast accuracy would produce $36.5 million in annual benefits to agriculture and hydropower in the West, and I'm sure there's been other studies since then.
That's right now, as well as being on the lower side.
Right, I mean, this is 20 years ago, so this is all I could find in the short amount of time I had to put this together. This point is one that John and I were talking about in the hallway before, is new methods for incorporating climate forecasts, and not necessarily climate forecasts that are subjective, but maybe ways to incorporate, like, CFS data directly and objectively, or, you know. But the caveat here is, and I think this is probably clear to most people in the room, is this has to be based on data that's available when the forecasts are made. A lot of times we get pie-in-the-sky ideas from the research community about incorporating, you know, forecast ideas about data that's not available after the forecast has already been observed.
But this is an area that we ought to look together at. What can we do? And I've been spending some time recently looking at some of your products to see what they mean to us in terms of some measures of performance in our systems. And I think that there's some questions we need to look at together about could we make better use of, like, your canonical correlation stuff. A whole range of questions. And I don't know that we can, but I think we should explore them. And possibly as part of some climate test bed activity, I don't know in what context. But there's
so you want to look across the suite of tools.
We want to look at everything. And I think, actually, as I look at this, that some of your other users might like to look at other products too, besides the official product that you put out that is easy, perhaps the easiest to use, or the basis for many of the other products you might make. But the supporting information that goes into that could have value to your users that you're not aware of. And I'd like to test that hypothesis that that's true with the hydrology program.
Just a couple observations about that issue. And it's related to the first bullet. I think that you should put, well, there are two alternatives that I'm thinking of. But if you're going to be exploring methods of objectively time incorporating NCEP climate forecast, I think you ought to get a heads up on the future, a head start on the future, and really put most of your efforts on CFS first. But the other alternative that I think is even more viable than worrying about all these old compromised linear techniques like CCA is to explore using CPC's insight into what's going to happen with ENSA next month, next season, two seasons from now, and the trend signal combined, and utilize the phenomenological forecast rather than the end state categorical temperature.
No, I agree entirely with those points. I guess to me the ultimate question is that those questions are trying to answer is, like, how best can we apply the climate forecast into the hydro, you know, forecast problem?
Yeah.
And I think that my point, and talking to John, I think he agrees with me.
By the way, I agree with what you said. We should look at a lot of it's regime dependent too, the relationship.
Yeah, well,
and so for that reason alone, we shouldn't try to do it ourselves because
right,
we don't understand those regimes.
You know, you've got a huge, in forecast of opportunity context, you have a huge
right.
amount of skill already in certain right. anticipatable situations.
Right.
And And that's why looking phenomenologically, regime dependent.
And location dependent, too.
Absolutely.
Is the agriculture industry interested in your forecast because of irrigation as opposed to?
Definitely, yes. Historically, the kind of paradigm has been the NRCS has been dealing with the agricultural customers, and we, you know, Weather Service has been dealing with kind of the bigger, like Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers type customers. So the joint product, you know, the two agencies issue together is definitely goes to the agricultural customers, but primarily through the NRCS.
But for irrigation purposes as opposed to simply growing purposes, is that where, how it enters into the scene?
Right. Well, you know, irrigation is for kind of everything in the right. West. So.
Yeah, what happens is this, okay, in climates where you don't have needs for irrigation, especially the eastern United States,
yeah, right.
In climates where we depend completely on irrigation,
right,
you are in Arizona, it's essentially, well, who cares what the climate is going to be, you have to irrigate no matter what. It isn't those in between, the semi-arid climates, to say Midwest, that's where the value of the forecast is important.
This will give you availability of water, you will be able to irrigate.
Right. I mean, you have to combine it with some knowledge of water law and, like, you know, where you are in the pecking order for water rights, you know, on a case by case basis. But yes.
Has there been any more research on these benefits?
I'm sure there have been. This is the only one that I have on my fingertips. I'm sure Wayne you mentioned
your 2001 report that was based on the ANCAP's economic values in different sectors. Is that the website?
Okay.
I just knew it wasn't right. And then we've got a couple of recent things looking at soil moisture, economic benefits. One of the folks at the University of Nebraska did a study for us. And there's another published one.
I did one at the very back of the envelope calculation. That was 1% room. We just have to take into consideration the amount of hydropower generated and making some assumptions. I didn't have the prices, but making some assumptions on the wholesale price of energy and so on and so forth. And 1% increase, it was about 2 years ago, was of the order of $70 million for pure reclamation alone per year.
Wow. Continuing on, this fourth point is interesting, improving forecast verification to validate the impact of the climate forecast. Gary kind of alluded to that we historically had verification issues, put nicely in the literature in the hydrologic community.
Yeah, so. Why is that a climate requirement? Because I've seen some activity in the Office of Hydrology recently where you're getting up to speed and doing your verification.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I think in terms of using the climate forecast, that's some area where we might need some help from our climate community.
Well, I think you've got the answers.
Okay.
Especially you.
You've had some feedback from the climate community.
This is true. I got feedback.
Optimists from Lipsy, these are hard to come by.
Oh, I was working.
So the last two bullets, especially in the Northwest and then also in the Colorado River Basin, we've had a lot of requirements from users to have longer-term forecasts, especially for year two. And so this is something that if it were available, we would be able to use. This, just kind of parenthetically, this is coming from the Bureau of Reclamation and their need to make an annual operating plan. So their big one, I think, they make in July. So if they're making an annual operating plan in July, they need actually the second year.
Do you estimate total water in the system for a particular region? You integrate up all the stream flow and just say here's the.
So that's what that backflow.
Yes.
We do it to a degree.
We don't.
If you ever want to get a good headache, try doing it for the Colorado River Basin because there's all the irrigation diversions and who knows what really happened. And you try to resolve what you gauged upstream and downstream and what you know about what's in the middle. One of the reasons why we haven't made flow predictions traditionally for all the Colorado is because you don't really know some of that. But with these models, we have a better chance of getting a handle on it. And someday, we won't be such a headache, maybe. But trying to figure that out is not simple.
Was there a trend in either time of the year when there's more water in the system? Or
oh, sure.
Just amount of
well, the spring is when, yeah. when the melt, you get melt and whatever. And
but
so
most people are showing melt time.
Is it moving forward? That's exactly right.
Which is
and
so
and it's making our forecasts a lot more valuable than they were because yeah. now the systems are being stressed beyond where they were. And actually having the evidence that we can explain it is a positive factor. And then you have other situations in the West, like in the American River, the flood frequency over the last century has increased immensely. For reasons that aren't explained, by the way. And so having an ability to account for what's going on and to get some lead time in it is a major part of how to cope with that risk that we don't know how to deal with.
Final bullet is the data requirements. Obviously, since we have calibration issues, we have a need for high quality, long duration, high frequency records of precipitation, tear flow, and temperature. So this is why the hydrology community has been so supportive of things like whatever co-op modernization is called now.
You're right.
Okay. My last two slides, which I'll just go quickly, I know I'm probably over time. I just wanted to recap a collaboration effort I was involved in when I was at the CBRFC a few years ago and kind of my thoughts on why it was successful or not successful. Just kind of in a real quick nutshell, what we did is we looked at the CDC ensembles, the 14-day ensembles that they put out, and we worked with Martin Clark at Ceres and a couple of people at CDC to incorporate those into our hydrologic model, basically correcting the bias and downscaling them essentially to our basin. So this plot is showing, this is kind of a summary plot that shows forecast lead time on this axis going from 1 day up to 21 days, forecast initialization time going from April 1st up to the end of July on this axis, and then contoured is the skill score improvement over a similar set of forecasts run with climatology. And then the black line here is just showing the mean hydrograph for that particular basin. So the kind of the upshot of the results were that we showed we had really strong improvement in the forecast scale during the rising of the hydrograph when the snow melt was most important. And so anyway, this was documented in a paper we implemented at CBRC. But the reason I said it was partially successful is that there was no way to directly implement this into the national software. Although since then, through the works of John and others, the concepts have been more or less implemented in the experimental system that he's running at the CNRC and other places. So I think that this last kind of problem will go away when we get a lot of things that Gary's talking about. So anyway, why was this successful? I think it was successful because we focused on a mutually interesting problem. It directly addressed an operational requirement. We had to improve forecasts during the first 2 weeks for basically wildlife management on the Colorado River. And then it also addressed some relevant research questions. We were able to publish a paper or two. This point I think is important. There was early and active Weather Service involvement. It was basically initiated as a joint effort from the very beginning rather than, you know, academia coming to us with some solved problem and asking us to implement it. And then, like I mentioned before, the proposed, anything that's going to be implemented later service has to have a real-time, it has to be implementable within the real-time forecasting environment. We can't be relying on things that aren't observed at the time the forecast is implemented. So anyway, that's all I have. Thank you again.